She had spent that first Christmas with us, that legendary first Christmas we would talk about for years to come. We had arranged to meet on Christmas Eve at Paddington. Running 10 minutes late, I exited the underground and navigated my way through the jam-packed station, stopping from time to time to strain on tiptoes in order to glimpse her over the sea of heads and hats at our pre-arranged meeting point. Suddenly I heard my name being called out from behind me. Clearly and unmistakably, her voice cut through hundreds of voices of children crying and parents scolding, of buskers singing Christmas carols, of trains arriving and leaving platforms, through bleeps of ticket machines and clunking of gates. I looked back to see her sliding side-saddle down the handrail of the escalators, arms frailing wildly above her head in an attempt to catch my attention. A wide white grin danced across her pale, mischievous face. Her long, unruly hair hung in ropes to her waist. The sight of her descending from the cafe unnerved me. I pushed my way back through the throng just as her feet landed on solid ground. "What time do you call this?" she asked. I stared at her in disbelief. "What are you doing, you nutjob? We're trying to be discreet. Can we not draw attention to ourselves, please? Anyway, one day you are going to land on your ass rather than your feet if you keep doing that," I said. "Oh, lighten up, misery guts," she laughed, and taking my hand, she pulled me further into the station. "Come on, we better get a move on." "Where's your bag?" I asked, noticing she was travelling light. "I didn't bring one," she said. "I have everything we need right here." She patted the bulging pockets of her jacket. "You are kidding me," I said. "You have not got it on you, have you?" "Of course I have," she said, matter-of-factly. The intercom clicked into life, and a voice smoothly announced that the 1448 train from Paddington to Cardiff would be leaving from Platform 9. Suddenly I felt quite sick. "I can't do this, Becca," I said, pulling my hand from hers. She turned to face me. "We don't have time to talk about this now, Helen." Her voice more serious, her face more focused. "We have no choice. What's the alternative? Now, come on, or we'll miss the train."